From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Tuesday, September 13th, 2016. We are so honored you've allowed Current Sports to be a part of your weekday afternoon yet again. On today's show, we've got a hot one in store for all of you out there, as we will be chatting with Mr. Rob Rubik, former Detroit Lions tight end from 1982 to 1988, who is now a Detroit Lions studio analyst for Fox Sports Detroit. Rubik will give his thoughts on what took place in week one for the Detroit Lions as they were able to squeak out a win over the Indianapolis Colts. You don't want to miss that chat, folks. It is going to be a great one. Also on today's show, we will recap what took place this morning at Spartan Stadium as head coach of the Michigan State football team, Mark D'Antonio, as well as team captains Riley Bulla, Demetrius Cox, and Tyler O'Connor, all addressed the media leading up to, of course, Saturday night's big showdown at Notre Dame between ND and the Green and White. So we'll have plenty of coverage from the press conference this morning. Also, troubling news concerning a Michigan State doctor who was accused of abusing a USA gymnast. And on the back end of the show, we will yet again introduce you to another current sports production assistant who will be helping us throughout this entire semester and bringing us great material. And we will also talk about the Detroit Tigers. So, as you see, our plate runneth over with a ton of sports talk throughout this entire hour. Call in and be a part of it. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, and troubling news to start our headliners today. Dr. Larry G. Nassar has been accused of molesting two gymnasts during the 1990s and early 2000s. The Olympic medalist sued Nassar along with USA Gymnastics, accusing the organization of failure to act on suspicions. The other woman, who was treated by Nassar as a teen gymnast, filed a police complaint at Michigan State University last week. Now, Nassar has been suspended since August 30th when Michigan State received the criminal complaint and will remain suspended during the investigation. Now to MSU football news. Michigan State linebacker Ed Davis might see the field this Saturday night in South Bend, Indiana, when Michigan State takes on Notre Dame. Now, Davis was granted a sixth year of eligibility by the NCAA on Friday after injuries have plagued his career. Davis missed time during his freshman campaign with knee and shoulder injuries and all of last year with a torn ACL that he suffered in preseason camp. Now, head coach Mark D'Antonio, as well as team captains for MSU, spoke to the media this morning at Spartan Stadium. We will have plenty of coverage from that in just a second. Jim Harbaugh, this is a hilarious story, folks. He is accused of eating, well, really tough to say, folks. I'll just let this snippet do the talking, all right?
I was asking myself, anything on your mind, anything you want to talk about? Well, the internet has kind of exploded this week because Jim, during the game with the camera on him, they were saying Jim
ate a booger.
Okay, thank you. I was trying to be more indelicate than that.
I have never eaten a booger in my entire life.
During Saturday's game.
It might look like that was what was happening, but I mean, you rub your nose and then you bite your fingernail. That's not eating a booger. There was no booger eaten.
You heard it here first from the source. There was no booger eating from Jim Harbaugh on Saturday at the UCF game. Clear the air.
For clarity here, yes. You know, for the record, I have never eaten a booger in my entire life.
There you have it. All those people on the internet, you heard it here from the boss. Never.
How funny is that, right? Yeah. Jim Harbaugh accused of eating a booger. I don't even feel comfortable saying it on the airwaves. I feel like that should be like an FCC violation. But, yeah, eating a booger on national television during Michigan's 51-14 rout of the UFC Knights. Now, Harbaugh, he denied such accusations, as you just heard during that interview with the voice of Michigan football, Mr. Jim Brandstatter, claiming that he merely rubbed his nose and then bit his fingernail. All right, moving on. Michigan State's Spartan Head logo was ranked as the best logo in all of college sports, beating out Texas at number 2 and Virginia at number 3, according to Athlon Sports. Now, Michigan State decided to emphasize the Spartan Head logo back in 2010, if you remember, after a 2-year evaluation of its identity and brand. Now, Michigan State's mascot, Sparty, was also ranked as the best in the Big Ten this year. Michigan's Block M was listed at number 25. Speaking of U of M, Mitch McGarry, former Michigan Wolverine, has been suspended an additional 10 games for violating the NBA's anti-drug policy. Now, McGarry, who currently plays for the Oklahoma City Thunder, he initially was suspended 5 games for violating the policy in July and will be suspended for a total of 15 games. McGarry left the Thunder at the end of last year for personal reasons after only playing just 20 games. 2-time boxing Olympic gold medalist, Flint Town's very own and Flint's favorite daughter, Clarissa Shields, threw out the first pitch at the Detroit Tigers game last night. Shields, a Flint native, won her second Olympic gold medal for middleweight boxing this summer during the 2016 Olympics out in Rio de Janeiro. Now, Shields has said that she is still undecided on whether to turn pro or try and defend her title again in the 2020 Olympics out in Tokyo. And speaking of the Detroit Tigers, they rallied in the 7th inning last night to top the Minnesota Twins 4-2 after 2 close plays at the plate. Andrew Romine scored the tying run on a double from Jose Iglesias. The Tigers were then able to take the lead on a sacrifice fly by Ian Kinsler, and Miguel Cabrera added another run in the 8th with his 440th career home run. Daniel Norris gave up 2 solo homers, but also set a career high with 11 Ks in only 6 innings of work. Game 2 will take place tonight at 7:10 p.m. at Comerica Park. Kyle Gibson takes the mound against Matt Boyd. Calvin Johnson, known as Megatron by Lions fans, earned a new nickname during his debut on the TV show Dancing with the Stars. Judge Bruno Tonioli has deemed Johnson Cha-Cha-Tron. I love that. After his cha-cha dance to Flo Rida's That's What I Like with his partner Lindsay Arnold. Now, Johnson sported a blue shirt with his famous 81 on the back. Two men, and this is a complete contrast to the moment of Calvin Johnson, all right? Two men were arrested Monday night after crashing Olympic swimmer Ryan Lochte's debut on the show. The incident was not shown on camera, and the police called it a pre-planned action. A few women were escorted out of the audience after chanting liar towards Lochte. Here's a snippet of how that played out on live television.
Ryan, yeah, you're right. This is a place for second chances. What you bring to this ballroom is all we want to see. And I really do feel that you brought your best to this ballroom. You have a long way to go. Swimming is a... Excuse me.
Yeah, that's how it played out, folks. And as the show went to break, they came back and Lochte stood there awkwardly. And he was asked about the moment and he said it hurt. All right. Last but not least, a disabled middle distance runner. Get this, shattered the 1,500-meter Paralympic world record after winning gold at the Rio Paralympic Games, beating Olympic champion Matthew Centrowitz by more than 1.7 seconds. His name is Abdelatif Baka of Algeria. He won the 1,500-meter final on Monday night in a stunning performance that not only set a new Paralympic world record, but stands as the fastest 1,500-meter time recorded by an able-bodied or disabled athlete in Rio over both the Olympic and Paralympic Games. That's fantastic stuff. Congratulations to Baka of Algeria. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Call in if you want to be a part of today's show. You know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, or even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR_sports. Without further ado, I do believe it's about that time to start the show.
Are you old enough to have watched the 10-10?
Yeah.
Were you a kid then, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember it?
Yeah, I do remember.
What were you? What were you doing?
I was 10.
And you watched the game?
Yeah. I think I did. Yeah. As far as I know, I think I did.
But you weren't a Spartan then, right?
No, I wasn't a Spartan then. I was 10.
Well, we all have.
I was just a happy kid. I didn't have all these pressures on me.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gents, boys and girls, to this afternoon Tuesday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, and I trust that you all are having a fantastic start to your week. A ton to talk about on today's show. As I mentioned at the top of the hour, we will be chatting with Rob Rubik, former Detroit Lions tight end from 1982 to 1988. He is now a Detroit Lions in-studio analyst for Fox Sports Detroit. And get this, he's also a teacher, too. He's been teaching for like 25 years at Lapeer High School. Very cool stuff. So Rob will join us on the show to, of course, recap what took place with the Lions and the Colts on Sunday. And looking forward to the Tennessee Titans matchup in Week 2. And Rob will even talk about his work with kids, which is a pretty fantastic one, folks. Again, he certainly has a passion for teaching. So you don't want to miss that. And we will also be chatting about the Detroit Tigers, still competing for a place in the wild card race in the American League Central. But we'll have plenty of Michigan State college football talk starting right now. As you just heard from my uncle, Uncle Freddie, Freddie Heumann, sports director at Channel 6 News, as he had a pretty funny moment with Mark D'Antonio this morning at Spartan Stadium, as D'Antonio holds his weekly presser each and every Tuesday morning to address the upcoming matchup, whoever that matchup may be. And this weekend is a pretty big one, folks. Pretty big one. Michigan State, Notre Dame, at Notre Dame. It's going to be on, folks. I mean, it's sort of an odd time for the Michigan State football team. As we've highlighted in the last week, Michigan State coming off a Week 2 bye week. Week 2. Really not even getting your foot wet in the college football year, and you already have to say goodbye for a week. And they have to come back and are immediately thrown in the fire to have to play the Fighting Irish, DeShone Kizer and company. Going to be a fun game. Saturday night, 7 p.m. kickoff. And, of course, that was the centerpiece of the talk from Mark D'Antonio and team captains Riley Bulla, Demetrius Cox, and Tyler O'Connor this morning. And there have been some classic games, some absolutely classic games when you talk about the D'Antonio era, at least the D'Antonio era, and Michigan and Michigan State and Notre Dame, when you talk about those two teams matching up. And historically, of course, I mean, how could you forget about the 1966 10-10 tie between Michigan State and Notre Dame? That game is referenced countless times. Countless times when you talk about Michigan State football history. And, you know, Mark D'Antonio, he addressed that. He addressed whether or not that 10-10 tie has been used as motivation over the years. And certainly so. I think we all know the answer to that question as well. But, you know, for me personally, everybody has a personal memory from the Michigan State-Notre Dame rivalry, right? For me personally, I had to go back as I was chatting with our newest current sports production assistant, Lou, before we took the air. And you get to meet Lou later on in the show. And I was chatting with Lou, and I was like, man, you know, there have been some just great games in the history of this rivalry. And for me, the biggest game that stands out in my memory goes back to 2010 when I was a sophomore at Michigan State University. I had just received my very first internship in the sports broadcasting industry with the Big Ten Network Student U, ran by now the retired Rick Church, who was the director of sports broadcasting here on campus. And one of my very first gigs was actually because, you know, when the big networks come in town, they're looking for help in any way they can get it, right? So they usually, when they come to college campuses, they reach out to the student U interns who are, of course, foaming at the mouth to work with these big networks to try and get any type of exposure or experience. So, you know, I remember Rick sent out an email that week and said, hey, ESPN is looking for a few folks from our student U staff to help out with just holding cord on the sidelines as the cameras run back and forth up the sidelines to try and get cool shots for the broadcast. So, of course, as soon as I saw that email, I jumped on it, sent an email to Rick. Rick got back with me, and bam, what do you know? 2010, I was there working with ESPN, again, not in a great capacity, but just holding cord and helping out the camera crew. Michigan State and Notre Dame, right? And, of course, that, if you remember, is the famous Little Giants moment. The Little Giants play in which Michigan State pulled off a last-second victory on a fake kick that everyone still talks about. I mean, just an incredibly famous game, right? And I remember, and if, to add to that story, funny moment for me, you know, when you work in the media, in the sports media, you can't cheer. There is no cheering in the press box. There is no cheering as a journalist when you are covering a game. You have to be completely neutral. Can't be any bias. You got to be completely unbiased. I am sitting there on the sidelines watching that moment with an ESPN apron on. And once that play was complete, I remember completely losing it. I lost it. Again, I'm a sophomore at Michigan State University, and a moment like that happens, you better believe, I don't care who I was working for, I was losing my mind and celebrating. And I remember celebrating, and I even remember Kirk Cousins running over, and I remember vividly giving Kirk Cousins a high five, and he and the team rose into the locker room. And I'm looking at the cameraman for ESPN, and he kind of smirks at me, and he says, okay, I get it. So that for me is my number one memory from the Michigan State and Notre Dame game, rivalry, I should say. And if you remember, after that game, Mark D'Antonio had a bit of a heart problem. It had to be taken to the hospital. I mean, that was a lot of drama, folks. And probably another memory to throw out, too. I remember when I was a journalist covering that Michigan State-Notre Dame game as a journalist, my very first gig at Channel 6. One of my very first gigs at Channel 6 was covering the Michigan State-Notre Dame game on a Saturday in 2013. And I remember I was just in love with Skylar Diggins. Skylar Diggins, former Notre Dame women's basketball player, great, who's now doing great things in the WNBA and beyond. And I spotted Skylar Diggins at Spartan Stadium in the crowd, and I'm sitting there with this camera, and I spot her, and I turn the camera towards her, and I'm just like, I hit record, and I'm recording her, and I'm like this paparazzi stalker guy on the sidelines. No one else has their camera out. This is like an hour at least before kickoff, And she points at the camera and she gives like this disgusting look to me. And she just scoots back in her chair and her mother is cracking up. I will never forget that. So yeah, I had like a creepy moment with Skylar Diggins back in back when I worked at Channels, and Isaac is cracking up behind the glass right now. So those are my two Notre Dame and Michigan State rivalry stories right there that I had to tell on today's show. But right now, I want to move to our coverage from the Michigan State football press conference that took place this morning. Again, Mark D'Antonio, as well as captains Riley Buller, Demetrius Cox, and Tyler O'Connor, they all spoke to the media today. And I want to talk about, you know, the Little Giants play. And Mark D'Antonio was asked this morning, you know, whether or not the Little Giants play. And that moment was a quote-unquote turning point in this rivalry. And here's what Coach D had to say.
That's tough for me to say. I thought it was a great football game. First of all, when you go back and you relive that a little bit, it was a great football game. It went back and forth throughout the entire game. And there were a lot of other things that happened in that football game, big plays, both sides of the ball, you know, both teams. I just think it was another ending, another moment that this one went in our direction. So I think it was exciting. I can't say that. That's why you guys do what you do.
No, I got to ask, Isaac, I mean, do you remember, because you weren't in college, I was a sophomore in college, so you were still in high school, but do you remember that game? Do you remember watching that? Did you watch that game at all between Notre Dame and Michigan State in 2010, the Little Giants play?
I did watch it. I think more so than a turning point for this franchise, it was more of the national exposure for the first time since D'Antonio took over. It was the time where kids like me in New Orleans, way across the country, did watch Michigan State. We took notice. We said, wow. What a play. And then you're like, oh, Kirk Cousins, all of these guys. You start recognizing a few of the names involved and who are incorporated into this program. So for me, I think this was more of a turning point in terms of the spotlight and the attention and the recognition that MSU got more so than the program itself. But, oh, I definitely know of the Little Giants play. It's legendary across the nation.
Yeah, and I think that, again, that's a game. When the bright lights are on, you got to perform. I always say that. And that's what separates the good programs and the great programs. You've got to win when everything is on the line. You got to win when the world is watching you. That was a nationally televised game on ESPN. It was, I believe it was the game of the week. You know, it was probably the game of the week on ESPN. I think, you know, Herb Street and Fowler and all those guys were in town for that game. And that happens. I mean, certainly a really memorable moment. Another memorable moment that, again, is constantly brought up throughout the Michigan State and Notre Dame rivalry is the 1966 10-10 tie in the national championship. I mean, that game is constantly brought up. I mean, when I first became a journalist in this industry, I remember a friend of mine bought me a book on the history of Michigan State football, and the 10-10 tie has its own chapter to start off the book. It's a moment that's is constantly brought up and really is used as motivation. And D'Antonio addressed that as well. And you heard in the snippet whether or not Coach D'Antonio remembers the 10-10 tie. And again, he was 10 years old. He wasn't even a Spartan because he's just a kid, a carefree kid, right? But does Mark D'Antonio use that game as motivation for his current teams?
I think it just the way we did is really just to connect to that era of football, and that's 50 years ago, but it connects us. And once you've been someplace, you know, once a program has been to a certain place, I guess, in history, then it can always return to that place. So that field, it can always cycle back. So nothing more than getting to know the players who played there, you know, the Baba Pizas and Gene Washingtons and Clinton Jones and these guys. But the game has changed. It's different players, different people, different coaches. So that's about the extent of it. But I think you can always look back and relate to it and say that you are part of it because you met the people that played in it. So you are a part of it. But that's probably the extent of it.
You know, every time I hear about the 10-10 tie, I can't help but think about if – the current rules in college football were implemented. Again, we won't have a tie. You're not having a national championship end in a tie, folks. So when the players, you know, the Fighting Irish and the Spartans respectively left that field, you know, it's cool to play in an epic game like that, but at the end of the day, you do want a winner. So I'm always curious, you know, when we've had, you know, members of that team come on the show, and specifically I remember we had Robert Viney on the show on Current Sports TV, and Robert came on the show and he talked about the 10-10 tie and how cool it was to play in it, but he also talked about, you know, how, yeah, we left it as a tie. You want to have a winner in that game. I can only imagine. I mean, you can't that's the creme de la creme of college football, and it ends in a tie, Isaac. I always think about that and whether or not, you know, the players who played in it, the coaches and personnel and fans, it's a catch-22. Am I not right?
No, you're entirely right. It's one of the most what-if games and moments in college football history. It could have swayed the future of either of these two franchises had one team lost. That was the game of the century. That's mm-hmm. what was deemed,
right,
and rightfully so. So it breaking as a tie, yeah, it was the game of the century, and it deserved that title. At the same time, what if one team had won? We could have looked at dynasty for 50 years to come, and obviously that didn't happen with either. But that's why you're not a soccer fan, too. You're not accustomed to the ties.
That's why I hate soccer, man. I can't stand. You go out there and you play for 2 to 3 hours, and then it ends in a tie? Come on, man. I hate ties. Hate them. They should not exist in sports, period. That's just me, though. But I want to throw this question out to our listeners out there, with this being Michigan State Notre Dame week. If that 10-10 tie revealed a winner, how does that change? How do you think that would change your perception of that game? What do you think? Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. And, you know, this is a saying that I think I will be using in the future because I've never heard it before Coach D'Antonio just popped it out of nowhere in his press conference. But, Isaac, have you ever heard of the saying, Willie on a pickle boat?
No.
Here's how D'Antonio put that saying in perspective.
Actually, what I remember is Kirk playing in 2009 and almost engineering a Joe Montana-type drive down the field, as I remember, and he was getting heavily criticized, and I said something about him not being Willie off the pickle boat, and all of a sudden I got a case of pickles. So, I think he had success down there. And then I think Connor Cook had some success down there as well. And we had an opportunity to win that football game in the last minutes as well. But we didn't win it, neither one of them. So things had in both cases. Both those quarterbacks really grew from their experience down there playing in that football game. And that's all I can ever ask is you go in, you compete, you do your very best, you compete, expect to win, play to win, and grow from it. And that's the thing I was talking about earlier. You need to grow from your experiences, and I think both those guys really did grow after their performances down there, and I thought their performances were solid.
Willie off the pickle boat. Yeah, he recounted that moment in 2009 when Kirk Cousins was a starting quarterback. He had won off the job, and both Kirk Cousins and Connor Cook have played at Notre Dame. They both have lost, though. It's a hostile environment. I can only imagine what it's like to walk in at Touchdown Jesus with all of that pressure surrounded around you, and you have to go out there and concentrate and lock in and win a football game. Both had solid games, though, Cook and Cousins, as Mark D'Antonio alluded to. But again, with the game on the line, you got to come up big, and that's not what Kirk did in 2009 against Notre Dame. But Willie off the pickle boat, I've never heard of that saying, and any of our listeners out there, if you know what that saying means, please call in because I have no idea.
But I still don't know. I could not figure that out in context. If you gave me 100 tries, Willie off the pickle boat and then having a box or a jar of pickles, that even confused me a little bit more.
Well, maybe there's definitely some historical context behind this saying. We have to look up exactly what that context
is. You think there was a pickle boat in the history of the U.S. or something that came from?
I don't know. It's got to have some. You just don't pull that saying out of anywhere. No. But it's got to have some historical context. I don't know what that context is. But at the end of the day, you know, getting a jar of pickles is not a good thing. That's what D'Antonio is saying. So,
Because
that drive went awry for Kirk Cousins. All right. So, but it's going to be very interesting. I think when you look at this game, though, there's so many different dynamics. Of course, everyone is talking about Michigan State coming off a bye week, you know, and they've only played Furman, and it wasn't a very convincing effort against Furman. I mean, 28 points against Furman, it should have been a bigger blowout than it, quote unquote, was against the Paladins. At the same time, you know, this is a Michigan State team with a lot of power, with a lot of talent on it. I think in order for Michigan State to win this game, looking at what happened positively, offensively for Michigan State, LJ Scott was fantastic in game one, Isaac. I mean, he ran for 105 yards and a touchdown on 20 carries during that season opener. Tyler O'Connor wasn't great, but he looked comfortable. I will say that. He looked comfortable, and he did settle in into the offense as the game went on. He's going to have to play better, though, than he did against Furman if he wants to go on the road at Notre Dame and win. So it's going to be very interesting to watch to see how quickly Tyler O'Connor settles in. But at the same time, if you're Notre Dame and knowing that Michigan State is coming off a bye week and looking at that game against Furman, Notre Dame does have problems on defense from what I've seen against Texas and what I saw in game two as well. But I don't think that the defensive unit for Notre Dame needs to be absolutely outstanding. I think that knowing that Tyler O'Connor, you know, him being a senior, that's beside the point. Knowing that Tyler O'Connor is now coming into a new role as a starting quarterback in only game two of his young campaign, they know that he's going to go through growing pains. And I think that this defense gains a little confidence in knowing that because they're not playing a quarterback with a lot of experience who has all of these accolades like Connor Cook had. So they know they don't have to be lights out. They just have to play consistently well against Tyler O'Connor in this offensive unit. So I would give, actually, when it comes to the Michigan State offense going against the Notre Dame defense, I would give the leg up to that Notre Dame defense just on that alone. But they do have to deal with LJ Scott, who looked very good in that game one.
See, and I would actually give the leg up the other direction. I would give it to MSU because as much as Notre Dame can take solace in knowing that this MSU offense sputtered out of the gate, at the same time, MSU can take solace in knowing that Notre Dame doesn't even know who their secondary is. You see time and time again them go through injuries or suspensions, and Tyler O'Connor, he can look to this game as another chance to build his confidence. We saw safety suspended. Notre Dame also lost another corner in week one against Texas. So I think MSU's got a good chance to really stretch this defense if Monty Medeiros can play the same type of game that he did against Furman, because he was fantastic. And MSU can just stretch a few vertical balls. I think they will be solid. But this does, like you said, all fall on the shoulders of LJ Scott.
It definitely does. And I tell you what, though, that Michigan State secondary has to play better as well. And I think who that secondary has to rally around is, of course, Captain Riley Bulla. Riley Bulla is a guy who, my goodness, he's a fantastic player. You know, all the Bullas have been that have come through the Michigan State football lineage. But, you know, Riley Bulla is the guy, and he is going to make sure that defense is going to be better in this game two matchup against Furman. De'Aaron Hicks was certainly targeted multiple times against Furman. He was challenged and he felt that challenge on multiple occasions, on multiple plays. De'Aaron Hicks has got to play better. That entire secondary has to play better, especially going against a quarterback that is so dynamic like DeShone Kizer. Because he can burn you down the field. He can burn you down the field with his arm and his legs. And it's going to be that defense is going to have to play up to par to keep the Spartans in the game. Simple as that. And on the contrary, I do think that Notre Dame, you know, going against this Michigan State defense, I think Michigan State's defense is going to be the best defense that Notre Dame is going to see all year. I do think that. So we will also get to see realistically where that Notre Dame offense is at this point in the season. But again, if Michigan State wants to win this game, that secondary has to play better. Simple as that. Right now, let's go to our phone lines. We've got Kirk from Grand Ledge on line one and wants to talk about Spartans and Fighting Irish. Kirk, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing just fine now.
Good to hear your voice. What's on your mind?
I agree with you about your assessment about the secondary because I suspect that Brian Kelly sat in the film room watching the film of the Michigan State Furman game and went, okay, we're going at De'Aaron Hicks, we're going to go vertical routes, and we're going to try and replicate 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Because
right.
2013 was the year they had the 7 pass interference calls, all 5 of them, which were bogus, but Yeah, I mean, he's just going to keep going at it, and I'm sure he'll go long, and they will have to play up.
Right. They certainly will. You know, a name that comes out when I talk about that Michigan State secondary, you know, a name that I bring up, and I have been bringing up, you know, since talking about this Michigan State Notre Dame game, is Equanimeous St. Brown, the wide receiver for the Fighting Irish. He is fantastic. Against Texas, the sophomore grabbed 5 passes for 75 yards, 2 touchdowns. He tallied 6 receptions and 85 yards during the blowout win over Nevada. He is the deep threat for Notre Dame's DeShone Kizer. He loves to link up with St. Brown, and I'm curious to know who's going to match up against him on Saturday night.
Well, and you know that Notre Dame has already figured out a way to get him matched up against Darian Hicks.
That's exactly right.
The bottom line.
Right, exactly. Or Vyontae Copeland. Well, I think we'll see Hicks and Copeland trying to slow down St. Brown. But they have to play better. Offensively, though, again, Tyler O'Connor, I don't think that he has to come out with the mindset that he has to be a world beater here. He can't. Don't do too much. Just turn. Don't turn over the football. Hit your targets that are open. Don't force it. If it's not there, throw the football away and lean on that running game with L.J. Scott, because that's your comfort as well. Simple as that.
Well, here's the one thing that I will say and will argue with anybody that Tyler O'Connor is better than Connor Cook is, and that is Tyler O'Connor is way better than Connor Cook ever was throwing the ball on the run. And with that, I would roll him out a lot because Notre Dame has a very good defensive line and front 7, and I would roll him out a lot and look to create mismatches off the rollout. But you know, we'll have to see. In terms of memories of Notre Dame and Michigan State, one of my fondest memories. I've got lots of memories of lots of games, but one of my fondest memories was of a friend of mine who gave me tickets to the first night game, Michigan State Notre Dame game, at Spartan Stadium. That was his parents' tickets, and they all thought Michigan State was going to get blown out. And it wound up being the game where State was ahead 42-3 after the first half, where everything that could go right went right for Michigan State, and everything that could go wrong went wrong for Notre Dame. And our tickets happened to be on the very first row of the upper deck right next to the opposing coach's box, and it was interesting to hear some of the things coming out of that opposing coach's box.
I'm sure many things that you can't repeat here on the air, right?
There are a few I cannot say on the air.
That is a very cool story. Kurt, thanks a lot for the call. Always a good one.
Take care, Al. Bye.
You got it. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will be chatting with Rob Rubick, former Detroit Lions tight end from 1982 to 1988. Now Detroit Lions in-studio analyst for Fox Sports Detroit. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Ladies and gents, boys and girls, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Right now, we are going to chat with Rob Rubick, former Detroit Lions tight end from 1982 to 1988, who is now an in-studio analyst for Fox Sports Detroit. He has been doing a fantastic job with Fox Sports Detroit and has really been knocking out the park for quite some time now. He is also a teacher at Lapeer West High School. So we now invite Rob to the show to talk about, of course, the Detroit Lions as they were able to get a Week 1 win on the road out in Indy against the Indianapolis Colts. They now look forward to a Week 2 matchup, the home opener against the Tennessee Titans, a team that lost in Week 1. Of course, you have Marcus Mariota with that squad, DeMarco Murray. A lot of offensive talent. Defense, though, has a lot of leaky holes in it, to say the least. So now inviting Rob to the show, how does Week 1, that win over Indy, set the tone for the rest of the year? And putting that win in perspective, I mean, you definitely want to be happy about it, but you also have to, you know, constantly remind yourself that it is just Week 1 and there is a ton of football left to play.
Well, it's a win, Al, and any win in the NFL is hard to do. Ask San Diego right now. I mean, you have a 24-3 lead, and you lose the game. Green Bay comes out of Jacksonville barely with a win. So it's tough to win in the league, and this is a pretty decimated defense that Indy threw out on the field yesterday. But the bottom line is Lions took advantage of it. And, you know, they put 39 points on the board, you know, 37 with their offense. So it's a team that did what they had to do. So as far as a tone, there's no lifelong tone or season-long tone ever set. I think that's kind of misused, Al. Mm-hmm. It's really just get the win. Now you prepare for next week. And you try to get a win, and then you prepare for the next week. There's no underlying tone, I don't believe, that carries through the NFL. It's just do it week to week. It's a grind.
Now, with that being said, Rob, you know, looking at how that game went on, and I remember I tweeted out during yesterday's game that, man, I mean, this looks like the same old song for the Detroit Lions. It was very similar to last year's season opener against the San Diego Chargers, in which the Lions blew an 18-point halftime lead. And then you start to see the Colts storm back. I mean, at the same time, Matthew Stafford, in that game-winning drive with under a minute left, it sort of dispelled the really, really hardcore notions that Lions fans have lived with year after year, not winning with the game on the line. What do you have to say about that? Because I thought it was very interesting to see how the Lions, with their backs against the walls, were able to pull something out, a win out, I should say.
You saw that earlier on in the game. I remember when Indy made a run, and they tied it at 28, and that place was going crazy, and it was loud. And the Lions went, I don't know, 80 or 90 yards right down the field and scored a touchdown. Mm-hmm. And then Indy came back right at the end of the, you know, that's when they missed the extra point, when Prater missed the extra point. And Indy tied, and the Lions came down again and made it with the field goal with 37 seconds when they started that drive. They had five long drives. You know, people say, well, they came out in the second half and they stalled. They didn't do it. You're not going to score every drive in the NFL. You're going to have three and outs. It happens. I think the expectation sometimes as a fan, and I'm even guilty of it sometimes, Al, that you get too high. You just want your team to score every time. Well, it's not going to happen. But the fact that that offense was good enough and they protected well enough and Stafford was spinning it, that they were able to, you know, put two big drives, the drive that put them ahead by a touchdown until Prater missed it, and then the field goal game-winning drive. That's two big drives late in the game when you had to have points.
Now, Rob, you being a former tight end, I want to talk about Eric Ebron. He had five catches for 46 yards, one touchdown. He has had an up-and-down tenure with the Lions, one that included, of course, a knee injury in week four of last year and, of course, a preseason ankle injury before the start of this season. Do you think this is the year that Ebron finally turned some heads?
He is what he is. I think when the Lions drafted him in the first round, they overvalued his ability. I think people think he's underachieved. I don't think he's underachieved as a tight end. I just think he was a third or fourth round, should have been a third or fourth round selection, Al, which the Lions took in the first round. So I think they overvalued his ability. So that being said, I think you're seeing what he can do. We saw this the second half of last year, and we're seeing it now. He's limited. He's not going to be able to. He's not a complete tight end. He's not Gronk. He's not going to line up on the end of the line, and you're not going to run outside zone at him with him blocking the defensive end, the 270-pound DN. You're going to flex him out. You're going to use him in space. What he's doing a little better is learning how to run a route. People come from the college ranks. Charles Rogers, great example, Michigan State Spartan. You come from the college ranks, and Charles just was faster than everyone. So he was always open, catch the ball any way you want, catch it, and you become a first-round draft pick. Well, you get in the NFL, everyone's fast, Charles. You better know how to run a route. You better know how to set people up, how to come out of cuts, how to catch the ball with your hands, how to work and read coverages. If you don't do that, you're not going to make it. You're not going to be successful. So I think Eric Ebron right now is learning a little bit that, hey, I was faster than all the DBs at Duke and Wake Forest, you know, and even at Florida State. The NFL is the best of the best. So now he gets in the league and he's just running his route. Well, he's not open. And when they throw the ball, he's covered tightly because guys are there and it's tougher to catch. Well, once he figures now that he needs to set people up, learn how to come out of a cut, get separation, know how to read coverages, you get yourself more space to catch the ball, your job becomes easier. And that's what we saw yesterday. He had space to catch the ball, and he did.
Yeah, Rob, the NFL is definitely another level, to say the least. Now, the Lions gave up almost 400 yards to the Colts receivers.
Yeah, that's disturbing, yeah.
Yeah, very. Now, what do you specifically pinpoint as to the reason why the Lions secondary.
No pressure.
Right.
Did Ziggy play yesterday?
No.
Did Devin Taylor play?
Uh-uh.
Right. I'm telling you, when Kerry Hyder, a guy who was in the practice squad last year, and he comes in, he gets two sacks, and that's basically the extent of your pressure for the entire afternoon. Everyone's raving, oh, Andrew Luck this, Andrew Luck that. I could have played Q there. You could have brought Bart Starr out of retirement. You know, he could have stood back there. There was no pressure. I mean, think how many times, maybe, what, twice he actually moved out of the pocket?
Right.
When he wasn't sacked? These guys are the best throwers in the world, and he's one of the best of the best. You let him stand back there, and you got T.Y. Hilton and Moncrief. These guys are fast. Now, these are fast for NFL standards. That puts a lot of pressure on your corners and your safeties. And there were some blown coverages, a few mistakes. So I think they're going to clean it up on the back end. I like Slay. I mean, he got one long one. He was there. He just stumbled a little bit. But he was in position. And that's what you need to look at, Al. Are the corners there? Is Lawson by the receiver when they're catching it? Because if they're a step and a half, they're beat. If they're there and they just miss the ball when they're stripped, well, I can live with that. I mean, the guy's there. He's competing. They're not going to catch that pass every time. You know, next time Lawson's going to get it. But they just had too much time. Mm-hmm. I mean, Andrew Luck, and no one in his face, even when he wasn't sacked. You got to push, make quarterbacks move in the pocket. You let them stand there and look down the field. It's like 7-on-7, pass skeleton for them.
So with that being said, Rob, you think this is a problem that's easily fixable as the year goes on?
Yeah, play better. Yeah, do something, Ziggy. I mean, you're getting paid, and you had a good year last year, and I think he's a good player, and I like him. But he's got to get some pressure. He's got to get out there and earn that money. We need him. And we need Devin Taylor, who had a breakout year last year, and people, you know, real high on him, but they just didn't show up. And this was, you know, an offensive line that was fairly beat up. You know, we expected a lot more pressure than that. Now, against the run, they were decent. You know, I think the D tackles did a good job against the run inside. Levy, you know, you just can't be selfish. You can't do that. You know, it's not about you, DeAndre. Someone says something to you from the sideline, big deal. Is it, you know, sticks and stones, Al?
That's right.
You don't turn back and, oh, come on, yeah, pump it up. Yeah, we're whatever. Don't do that. Just get your butt back to the huddle. It's a team game. You know, if you're wrestling a guy and he's talking smack, you want to do that, well, then you can back it up. Well, all you're doing here is hurting your team, giving them a penalty, which led to a score. So, you know, DeAndre's a really good player, and that defense is so much better off with him in there.
Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with former Detroit Lions tight end from 1982 to 1988, now a Lions studio analyst for Fox Sports Detroit, Rob Rubick. Now, Rob, what has Jim Bob Cooter done to jumpstart this offense since taking over midseason last year?
Well, he's done a few things. I think number one is, whether it was Jim Bob or it was a coach, you know, it was Coach Caldwell, somebody recognized that Theo Riddick is a nightmare for a linebacker or for a safety to try to cover in space. And they realized that Stafford was getting, pardon the expression, but piss-pounded for the first 8 games of the year, and there was no creativity to that offense. So what they started doing, and they started – are you still there, Al?
Yep, we're still here, yep.
They started getting the ball out. You know, everything went quicker. They started just getting it out to the backs, get it in space, some more slip screens, Golden Tate the ball in space. And by doing that, they started protecting Stafford, and it slows down the pass rush. Guys get – the defensive line's not hitting them. They're getting frustrated because, you know, even if you beat your guy, you make – oh, the ball's out. So Jim Bob started doing that and spreading the ball around, using all his weapons. You started seeing more of, you know, Theo Riddick, and you saw more of Eric Ebron last year. Remember, in the second half of the year, he started coming on. Well, that's all part of Jim Bob Cooter. And that's why I think – and I love Kelvin, and I think Kelvin's a first ballot Hall of Famer, but I think this receiving corps this year will be better for it, because now Matthew will use everyone. He doesn't feel that pressure from the fans or from the media or from the coaching staff. You know, we got Kelvin. Where now he can truly read it cleanly and let the game take him to where he needs to put the ball.
Well, that's
so,
a-
yeah, I think – getting back to answer your question, I get rambling on here, is Jim Bob Cooter, the difference is by, I think they simplify a little bit and they got it out quicker. They started using more people and they built some confidence and they're able to move the chains.
Now, going back to what you said about Matthew Stafford, Rob, I want to ask this to you. Have we seen the best of Matthew Stafford yet? And as crazy as that sounds, do you think that the absence of Calvin Johnson will now allow fans and other personnel to really see how talented Stafford can be?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I never thought of it like that, Alan. That's a good point. I think they will. But here's the thing. They have to keep him upright. There's very few quarterbacks in the history of the league that can deal with pressure, constant pressure. And that's what, and people, I mean, he got pounded. Think of those Minnesota games last year. I mean, that poor guy, he's, you know, there's no one tougher. There's no quarterback tougher. And the people ever question his toughness, that just makes me ill. Because he has taken more hits than any Q has in the past 3 years. And so the fact that, yeah, have we seen his best? I don't think so. And I think you're going to see it. But that's why Warford, Tomlinson, and Swanson, your two guards and your center, have got to play better this year. They invested. You know, you look at that offensive line. They got two first-round picks, or three first-round picks and two-thirds. You know, you got three first-round draft picks in that offensive line. You have Riley Reiff, you have Decker, and you have Tomlinson. And then you have Swanson and Warford were both third-round picks. Well, they need to produce, and they played better yesterday. I thought they did a pretty good job, and like, they did throw a lot of quick and intermediate stuff. They didn't do a lot of seven-step drop type of deal, throw the ball vertical. But they opened a few lanes in the running game, and they were able to run the ball effectively enough, which makes your passing game that much better. So that being said, I think Stafford is going to benefit from the Kelvin not being there. Not the Kelvin that we saw the last. Kelvin was beat up, man. People don't realize he was a warrior. I mean, his ankles are just jacked. His hands are jacked. You know, we say, well, he's so big. Well, yeah, it's you get hit more when you're big. Right. You're a little bit slower. You know what I'm saying? It's like guys like Antonio Brown. Maybe he doesn't get hit. No one hits Antonio. No one hit Barry for 10 years.
Right, exactly.
But those big guys, man, that's a target. And Kelvin, and there were years where the Lions were bad, and that's all they had, and they just force-fed Kelvin, and the poor guy catches 110 balls and getting pounded. So I'm glad for him and his wife, Brittany, who is the daughter of a teammate of mine. Brittany McNorton, her dad and I came in the league the same year. We're teammates for 7 years, drafted the same class. So
wow, how about that?
Yeah, Bruce McNorton, he's a scout for the Steelers now, but he's been a scout for years. But Bruce McNorton was a corner, played 10 years in the league. But he really, you know, he's a great daughter, and I think she's got a really good man. I mean, if you met Kelvin, we've been blessed in Detroit. We've had some great players who are quality guys, too, like Barry and Kelvin.
That is so true, Rob. Now, Rob, I want to shift the mood just a bit here with this conversation. With the reasoning behind the retirement of Calvin Johnson centered around his long-term health, how common do you think early retirement, I should say, will now become for the game's elite?
Well, I think you're seeing it more all the time, Al. I think you're seeing guys get out, not milking every dime out of the game, but they don't have to. You know, when I played, it was tougher for guys to retire because we didn't make Monopoly money. You know, we earned our living. Now these guys, they make Monopoly money, and if they get that second contract, you know, when they come out of college and they get the first one after they come out, you know, if you got half a brain, you're set. I mean, you're good financially. So now, that being said, well, now you keep an eye on your body. You keep closer tabs and say, hey, I got 7 in, I got 8 in, I got 6, whatever it is. I don't have to do this for 15 now. You know, I have a brain. I went to college. I mean, I can make a living. I want to have kids. I want to play with my son in the backyard. I want to know who he is. I want to look at my wife and remember her. You know, you don't want to look at your wife and think you did well. Well, who are you? What's your name?
Exactly.
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You want to come out of this with all your marbles intact. And guys, you see it more and more, are conscious about their post-career. And I think that's great. I think that's informative by their agents or their family or the NFL, PA, whoever it is. And I think they have to keep track of their medical issues and how healthy they are. But, you know, I tell guys, if you're healthy, you have to make them kick you out like 2 or 3 times of this league because this ain't real. This ain't not the real world. You're playing football and getting paid, dude. You're working 6 months a year. This is not the real world. I tell guys and I see with the Lions, I said, listen, if you're healthy, man, you got to make them cut you and cut you and cut you because this is not the real world, what you're doing.
Soak it up for sure. And, you know, with all the new information we are learning about concussions in relation to the game of football and, of course, long-term health in recent years, I mean, how did this make you reflect on your own football career, Rob?
Well, a lot. I take measures against it. I'm a big crossword puzzle, word puzzle guy. I try to work my brain a lot, as much as I can. I read just for the fact that they say it's like anything else. If atrophy of the mind, if you don't use it and you're not kind of testing it and pushing it, your mind's going to atrophy, and the dementia, the CTE, will, the onset will be sooner. So I absolutely take care of that. You know, and physically you walk, and I've had a knee replacement. I've had, you know, 8 surgeries, and but I'm good. I'm not complaining. I'd do it again. I mean, you know, I enjoyed it. It was, like I said, it was not the real world. I got to play for 7 years with some great guys, travel around the country, make a good living even back then, not like they do now. And, you know, and you're playing a game that you love. So it was a give and take. And I just think how they still need to change the rule, and I think I can fix to help the concussion issue. They just need to make guys tackle. Mm-hmm. You can't be a bowling ball. You can't just propel yourself. Everyone's just, no one tackles. You know, so what? You separate your shoulder. You know what? They can do shoulder surgeries. They're going to have, you know, you get your brain, you keep getting concussions. You can't fix that.
No, they can't.
If they make you tackle, you slide that head like we were all taught when we were young, you know, slide your head, hit with the shoulder, wrap up. You do that, you'd be a lot better off.
Now, I tell you what, Rob, you mentioned the real world, and you really have a very cool real world gig. I mean, you received your master's degree from EMU and Mary Grove College, and currently work as a teacher at Lapeer West High School. And
we merged, actually. It's Lapeer East and West merged, so it's Lapeer High School.
Oh, so it's just Lapeer now. And, you know, I done some Googling, and I saw a pretty cool feature centered on you. You know, given, you know, the viewers in Detroit, kind of an inside look into your teaching, and you were in the weight room.
Oh, yeah, when I did with Herman.
Exactly.
When Herman and I were doing the post.
Right,
yeah.
Tom Lydon. Just very cool stuff. Now,
wait, did you see Olivia in that eye?
Oh, I did. And I cracked
gave her a kiss, and I think people thought I was creeping on my students. People didn't know that was my daughter. So I said, make sure you put that's my daughter. I'm going to get fired by the Department of Education in Michigan and be calling me up.
You know, and I died laughing when she told me that, too. I'm like, yeah, I can see how that could really pose a problem if you didn't put that in there. But, you know, I got to ask, Rob, where did your passion, I should say, for teaching begin?
Well, you know, when I was in high school, Al, in the UP, we had something an hour a day. We had 7 hours, and 1 hour a day was called a study hall, where you went to the auditorium and you did homework. They just scheduled it, and so everyone, almost like, you know, getting tutored. So to get out of study hall, you could become our building, I was a small school, so like the high school, the middle school, the elementary, were all one long building. So you could get to the elementary school through the middle school and so forth. So I would be a student aide for an hour instead of sitting in study hall, and I did it with this lady who taught fourth grade. I thought, what a great job. You work with young kids. You're pretty much your own boss within this classroom. And they just adored her. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and she watching them, they're learning how to read. Well, actually, they had already read by then, but you're teaching them mathematics. And I just thought, man, what a great job.
Yeah, without a doubt. Again, Rob Rubick, former Detroit Lions tight end from 1982 to 1988, now with Fox Sports Detroit. Real briefly here, I want to introduce you all to one of our newest production assistants that will be bringing us content throughout the year. Lou, take it away real briefly.
Hey there. I'm Lou. I'm covering MSU club football this semester and just really looking forward to producing content for such a great show and everything.
All right. And Lou, what year are you at Michigan State?
I am a senior.
You are a senior. So,
yep.
Again, I want to get that in before we sign off, as you will be meeting many more of our PAs as we roll through the semester here at WKER's Current Sports. My man Lou, and he did a great job today, his first day working on the show. Thanks so much, Lou. All right, folks, we are out of time on this afternoon edition of Current Sports on this Tuesday, September 13th. We'll be back at it same time, same place tomorrow. You have been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKER, AM 870 East Lansing. Take care, and as always, be easy, people.